Our lesson this morning is entitled, Building a Strong Congregation. Of course, individually, we know that we have to build ourselves strong in order to be Christians, be strong Christians. But we need a strong congregation as well. Congregations are dying all over. Within 50 miles of here, there are at least four congregations that once met that no longer meet. Probably even more than that. So we see all around us congregations dying as a result of shrinking and not converting the lost, as a result of not keeping the young people faithful. So many churches that once were strong had the young people of that congregation grow up and become unfaithful. And when those young people become unfaithful, then in another generation the church there is gone. We see a situation similar to that near us as well, where the congregation is almost entirely elderly people. There are no young people. There are no children. There are no young families. Now, we certainly don't want to belittle the importance of the elderly in the church. We respect our elders, not just our elders that are appointed as elders, but those who are older. We respect them. We admire them. They mean a great deal to us. But we understand that if we don't bring the young into the church, then the time will come when there will be no church. We understand as well that if we do not, especially in a community like ours where people are not flocking in, you don't have many people moving to Choctaw County. You have a lot of people moving out. And because of that, we have to reach out to our community. A lot of churches in bigger cities appear to be growing to those on the outside, but in actuality, all that's happening is people are moving there who are already Christians. And they're not really growing. They're not really evangelizing. And as you watch those congregations, you see that they are not having any conversion. There are no baptisms, no restoration, no outreach. It's just a matter of them swelling because Christians are moving to the area. So we see the struggles that the church faces. And we know that we can be faithful, as Noah was, without necessarily having great numbers. We know that there are times when the community and the people around will not respond to the gospel. We know that's the case. But I don't believe we've reached that case here. I think we see that there are still people around us who are hungry for the gospel. When I think about how many faces I'm seeing today who were not members of this congregation when I moved here 9 years ago, there are a lot of you out there. Almost half of this congregation was not here 9 years ago. And we've had some to move away, we've had some to die, but we've had a lot of people in our community who are interested in the gospel when they can receive that true and unwatered down and uncorrupted gospel. And I believe there are still those out there in our community if we will look for them and find them. But we need to build a strong congregation in two ways. First of all, we need to build a strong congregation that is faithful to God, a sound congregation. But secondly, we also need to build a strong congregation that is actively doing, actively working. It's one thing to teach the truth. It's quite another thing to practice the truth. Revelation chapter 3 that was read, in verses 1 and 2, we see the church at Sardis. And here we have a perfect example of this. To this church in Sardis, he says, I know your works, your deeds, the things you've done, that thou hast a name that thou livest. In other words, you have a reputation for being alive. You have a reputation for being a sound church. church, so on and so forth, you have these reputations. He says, and are dead. They had a reputation. There are a lot of congregations who have a reputation for being a sound church. They have a reputation for being a strong congregation. But in some of those cases, like the Church of Sardis, they're actually dead. And then he warns them to strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die. He said, what few things you have there that are alive are about to die. You know, it's a frustrating thing working sometimes with plants and gardens and things like that. And sometimes a disease or bugs or sometimes just the weather will destroy a crop. And you see them dying. And it's especially frustrating when there's nothing you can do about it. Our corn died already, and I don't know what killed it. It may have been the hurricane blowing them down. I don't know. But they weren't looking too awful healthy before that. Maybe it was the severe heat. I didn't get them enough water. I don't know. But something caused the problem there, and they weren't strong enough to make it. Well, we know that not only as individual Christians, but as a church, there are things that are going to attack us, both from without and from within. And if we do not build a strong foundation, a strong congregation, then we can depend on our downfall. Our strength can either help us, or our lack of strength can destroy us. So we see these congregations shrinking, dying all over the country. What's happening? What can we do to ensure that doesn't happen here? Well, here are some things that I want us to think about. First of all, let's look at four characteristics of a church. And these four characteristics of a church are going to help us to be able to prepare ourselves and to help us be stronger as a result of an honest examination of ourselves and where we fall. First of all, we see what others think you have. This is your reputed characteristics or your reputed character. This is what other people think about you. What do other people think when they hear about the Northside Church of Christ? Well, sometimes we don't know. Some folks may think we're a cult. Some folks may think, as one young man told me, I can't quote him exactly, but he said, you're just a backwater church. Because we don't have hoofing and hollering and speaking in tongues and miracles. Well, may be the opinion of some. Other congregations from other places around us. Some congregations may consider us liberal. Some congregations may consider us radically conservative. Some congregations may consider us any number of things. They may think it odd because we worship with black and white together. They may think that we have too fancy a building. They may think we're wrong for building a fellowship hall. We don't know what all they think. And a lot of people think a lot of different things when it comes to our congregation. But we need to understand that what others think of us is not important. Now, to a certain degree, as long as we're doing what's right. If they think badly of us because it's true, then that should concern us. If our reputation in the community is that of being a church full of hypocrites, that should concern us. If our reputation in the community is that, well, you can do anything you want and go down there and it's okay with them, that should concern us. You see, Christianity teaches us that it doesn't matter where you've been, but it does matter where you're going. And we know we have a congregation full here of people who have been in some places they know they shouldn't have been. But if we're still in that same place, there's a problem. We've got to move beyond those things. It's not where we were, but where are we now? And where are we going? Because if we're going to heaven, we're going to have to leave the sins of this world behind. But what do others think? 1 Corinthians 12, 21-23. It says, and the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. No, much rather, those members of the body which seem to be the weaker are necessary, and those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, on these we bestow greater honor, and our unpresentable parts have greater modesty. So we see, as we look at 1 Corinthians 12, we can't be looking at others and thinking things about them and condemning them and, oh, well, I don't need you. As we look at the church, we're one body and we need everybody. But we also need everybody to do their part. There comes a time with the human body when a certain part does not do what it is created to do. There comes a point where the doctors have to remove that part. Or there comes a time when that part can cause the entire body to die. If that one part is not doing its job. We see sometimes how one diseased part of the body, with gangrene for example, if that's not removed, that gangrene will spread and it will destroy the entire body. So yes, we need everyone, but we need everyone to do what they're supposed to do. That will help us to build a strong congregation. What others think of us? What do others think we have here? We don't need to be so concerned with it that we change in order to accommodate what other people think. But we do need to be mindful of what they think about us. Hopefully, when they hear the name, they think about the church that sends out freely a paper to them. The church that invites them to come hear the gospel preached and doesn't ask them to pay for it. The church that freely gives out Bible literature and Bible tapes on Bible topics. The church that is trying to follow God's Word and God's Word alone. Now, a lot of people probably don't think of that. A lot of people probably don't know that much about the church here. We want to work so that everybody in our community knows about the church. And hopefully that they then will have a good set of thoughts about us. But that's what we first think of, is what others think. You see, the church at Sardis had a reputation. Other people thought they were a good church. But we see from that passage that just not having other people think that is not good enough. Other people might think we're the best church in our county, but that doesn't necessarily make it so. We have to be sure that we go further than that. So let's look then a little further. Secondly, what do you think you have? What do we think we have here? Do we think we have a good congregation here? Do we think we have a sound church? Do we think we have an active church? Do we think we have a faithful church? What do we think? Well, sometimes we can deceive ourselves. Sometimes we can say, well, we worship on the first day of the week. We take the Lord's Supper. We sing. We have preaching. We pray. We're a good church. Well, certainly those things are necessary. But those things in and of themselves don't make a good church. It takes more than that. We need to be sure that we are not deceiving ourselves. Sometimes we can be deceived about our character. Romans 12:3 says, for I say through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. God has given to everyone, every man, the measure of faith. So instead of us just thinking, well, our congregation must be a good one because it's growing. Well, there are a lot of churches out there that are teaching all sorts of false doctrine that are growing. One of the biggest churches, we talked about this in class the other night, one of the biggest churches around doesn't even pretend that they're interested in spiritual things for the most part. They're just all about motivational speech and feeling good and having some plays and some singing groups and some entertainment. But boy, they're popular. Well, being the biggest doesn't mean you're the best. Other churches might say, well, there's only five of us. We've been faithful to God. We know we're the smallest around, and that's, we know we're good because nobody likes us. And we know Jesus said, if the world hates me, then it's going to hate you. So since everybody hates us, we must be doing right. Well, that's not the case either. Having everybody hate you doesn't necessarily indicate that you are doing God's will. So we have to be honest with ourselves and ask ourselves, as we look at the measuring rod that God has given us, are we measuring them? We're going to have to build a strong congregation. We're going to have to make an honest assessment of ourselves. And in doing that, then, we are going to find, number three, what you actually have. What do we actually have in this congregation? In 1 Corinthians 12, 15 through 18, we see again Paul talking about the body, and he says, if the foot should say, because I am not the hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one of them in the body, just as he pleased. You realize what Paul just said? When the Lord added you to his church, he put you there for a purpose. And the purpose he put you there for is not the same as the purpose he put me there for. The purpose he put me there for is not the same as the purpose he put somebody else there for. But he has set us in the body for a purpose, as he pleased. Now, it's up to us then, whether we're going to live up to that, or whether we're going to refuse to do what God has intended for us. God has a plan for each and every one of our lives. Are we going to do it? What do we actually have? We need to honestly examine ourselves as a congregation. What do we have? What are our good points? What are our strong points? What are our weak points? We've got to be honest. What do we actually have? We have some ladies that are good at this. We have some men that are good at this. We have some young people that are good at this. We need more people that are good at this or that. We need to be honest about it and assess what we actually have. What a shame it would be if everybody tried to be the same thing. As Paul points out, if the whole body was an eye, well then where would the hearing be? If it was all hearing, then where would the smelling be? See, if all of us are good at one particular thing and nobody is working on anything else, then we're going to be a very lopsided congregation. We're going to be a congregation that's good at only one thing. We've got to determine what we actually have and determine what our needs are, what our strengths are. We may find that we've been forcing certain people to try to do things that they're not good at. And they have a great talent in another area that we've completely ignored. We've got to build a strong congregation. We have to use the strength. Imagine, if you will, I know many of you aren't that big into sports, but imagine a team. And on that team, they had a player that was very good at offense that they had playing on the defense. And the player that was very good at defense but couldn't play offense playing on the offense. What's going to happen? Well, that team's not going to be too good, are they? What if you have a great batter on a baseball team being the pitcher and not batting? And you have a great pitcher playing catcher and batting, and he can't bat too good. What if you got a fellow that can't catch playing first base, and a fellow that can't throw playing in the outfield? Well, you're going to have a mess. We've got to honestly assess the abilities that we have so that we get ourselves in the proper position, so that we're doing the things that we're best at. That's how we become the most successful. And then we have to look at what we ought to have, and we have to do this individually as well. These are our undeveloped characteristics. 2 Corinthians 7:1 says, "Therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God." Now, we talked a minute ago about talents and abilities. And there are certain talents and abilities that some have that others don't. But now we're talking about what all of us ought to have. You see, there are certain things that are talents. There are certain things that are blessings and gifts from God that we may have in abundance and that other people may lack entirely. But there are other things that are commands from God that we cannot do without, that we must have. Notice what he says. Let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit. Physical sin, spiritual sin, we need to get it out of our lives. Everybody needs to get it. Not just the preacher and the elders. Not just the Sunday school teachers. Everybody needs to get those things out of their lives. Not just, "Oh, but I've only been a Christian for a year." You better be getting these things out of your life then. And if you've been a Christian for 20 years and you're not trying to get those things out of your life, you better hurry up. We've got to get these things out of our lives. And then he says, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. We've got to start putting on those holy attributes. We've got to start doing those good things. Again, there are certain things that are talent that not everybody is going to be able to do. But there are other things that are requirements that everybody must do. But when I was in school, I remember that there were certain classes that we had to take. We had to take English. We lived in America. We had to learn to speak English. We had to take English class. We had to take math. We had to take science. So these classes, we didn't have a choice. You had to take them. Then there were some classes where we got an option. They had art. They had music. They had some PE type classes, and we had a choice. We could pick which one appealed to us, which one we were good at. I never took art. Those of you who have ever seen me with the chalkboard up here, you know I can't even draw a stick figure. Taking art would not have been a good use of my time. It would have been a waste of the teacher's time as well. I did take a little bit of music, some chorus, because I knew in the church with singing, we sing. It was good to develop some abilities in that area. Even though I didn't have the greatest ability, I thought I'd try to get a little more than I had. But those were optional. Those were elective. Well, see, there are certain areas where we can pick and choose with what we have the great ability in, or the greater ability in, and certain things that we don't have an ability in. But then there are other things where God has demanded it, that you must do certain things. Well, we spent the majority of our time on that first point of those four characteristics. Now we'll move quickly through the rest. We've got to understand that character, what you are, is what endures. Character endures. Reputations don't. Reputations come and go. People have a great reputation, and then a week later, everybody hates them. Somebody may have a terrible reputation, but then they do some fantastic thing and everybody loves them. What would we have done if Jesus had been judged based on his reputation. At the beginning of his ministry, he had 15,000 or more folks following him at times. At the end of his ministry, some of those same folks were hollered out, crucified. Your reputation is not endless, and it won't last, it won't endure. Make the most of yourself. So that's all there is to you. And the same thing applies to our congregation. We must make the most of this congregation. We can't sit around moaning and groaning because we don't have 500 members like some congregation in Birmingham does. They've got problems to go along with those 500 folks they've got. We've got problems to go along with the 75 folks or so that we've got. That's, we can't just constantly be longing for what somebody else has. Make the most of what we've got instead of always pining over something else. There is not better than here. We can make here the best that it can be on this earth. Reputation is for a time. Character is for eternity. Reputation is what men see in you. Character is what God sees in you. We saw that in Revelation 3. They had the reputation. What people saw was, oh, there's a church that's alive. What God saw was, there's a church that's dead. Which one was going to matter on judgment? What the people thought or what God thought. So, we've got to depend on what God thinks. Our character is important. We can fool the people. We can have a great reputation, but we cannot fool God. We must live it. We must have the character. In Acts 10:22, Cornelius the centurion had this reputation. A just man, one who fears God, and he has a reputation. A good reputation among all the nations of the Jews. That was his reputation. What God saw was, here's a man that's lost and needs to be saved. Now God saw that he had a good character. He gave alms to the poor. He prayed to God. He worshipped God. But he needed still the salvation of Jesus Christ. Youth passes, beauty fades, but character endures forever. Philippians 2:7, we see that Jesus made himself of no reputation. Well, why was that? Because he knew reputation wasn't what was important. He was willing to make himself of no reputation and take the form of a servant, a slave, the form of man, coming in the likeness of. He was willing to do that because he knew his character. The same Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, was able to get up from the table and go and gird himself with a towel and wash the apostles' feet because he knew who he was, and it didn't matter what reputation he might get if people saw him doing the job of servant. He had character. And he knew that was good enough. The reputation didn't matter. So here are a few characteristics of good character. And if we can develop these characteristics in our congregation, then we will have a strong congregation. Here they are. Philippians 2:15. That you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. If we can be blameless, if we can get that sin out of our lives and perfect the holiness, if we can be what we preach and what we claim we should be, if we can live up to that, then we will see that people will recognize the difference in us. And we will indeed be shining as lights in the world. And the church will be stronger without sin. Just as an individual Christian is stronger without sin. 1 Timothy 1:5 says, now the purpose of the commandment is love from a pure heart, from a good conscience, and from sincere or unfeigned faith. Love for one another is going to build a strong congregation. We have a another. We also see churches splitting, fighting, and where there once was one congregation, now there are five. Do you realize in Meridian, Mississippi, there at one time was one congregation of the Lord's church? Now there are five. Now why is this? Because of us. And I'm not picking on any of the people in the church of Meridian. That's not an unusual story. Here we have two when there ought only to be one. Because of disagreement and strife that are caused. Love covers a multitude of sin. Then we see 1 Timothy 4:12. Let no man despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, and in purity. You know, if each of us is striving to be an example to everybody else in the church, we're going to have a church full of folks that are working hard to be good examples. And what we'll actually wind up doing is being a good example to the people around us in the community. All of us. 1 Peter 2:11 and 12. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul. Having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, if when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. When people in the community see us out running around, sexually immoral, drinking, lying, cheating, stealing, cussing them out because they got a thing, they see us doing those kinds of things, they're not going to speak against us as evildoers for no reason. They're going to have cause to speak about us as evildoers. But if they never see us doing those things, if we're not doing any of those evil things, there are still some that are going to try to speak evil of us, but others will know better. They'll know, no, not the folks from that church. Those folks do what's right. But we have to work at that. We have to get that sin out of our lives. Again, conduct ourselves honorably among the Gentiles. One person in a company that someone does business with can turn that person against that company forever. And one Christian that mistreats or abuses someone outside the church can turn that person and all know about it against the church for the rest of their life. We must conduct ourselves honorably. Philippians 1:10, that you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ. Sincere. Not full of hypocrisy, full of sincerity. We've got to be sincere. 1 Peter 3:13 through 17. And who is he who will harm you if you become followers of what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you are blessed. And do not be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. But sanctify the Lord God in your heart, and always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. Having a good conscience, the day that defame you and evildoers, those who revile your good conduct in Christ, may be ashamed. For it is better if it is the will of God to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. Look what he says here. Sanctify the Lord in our hearts. And be ready to give an answer, a reason, a defense of the gospel. We need to be well studied. If we want the church to be strong, then we're going to have to know what's right and what's wrong. We're going to have to know why the preacher is the pastor, why we don't call the preacher reverend, and why we don't use instrumental music, and why we take the Lord's Supper on the first day of every week, and why we don't pass the collection plate during a gospel meeting and revival. We need to know these things. Why don't we speak in tongues? We've been studying these lessons on Sunday morning. It's a good lesson for us to study and understand why. What is it that's different about the church than the denominational world? If the church is just another denomination, then it wouldn't matter which denomination you go to. But the church is not a denomination. It's different. It's separate from those our good character is the best eulogy, the best tombstone that can be written. Those who loved us and were helped by us will remember us when all of the flowers have faded, when all of the marble tombstones crumble. And I've been to old graveyards where the tombstones were so decayed you couldn't read what was on them. But if you ask the descendants of some of those people who were buried there, they can tell you stories about what those people had done. What about your character? What about the church's character? What about our congregation? Are we working as individuals working together to build up a strong congregation? Or is every time somebody else places a brick in the building of that church, are we coming along and pulling it down? Or knocking down three or four more? Punching holes in the roof? And I'm speaking in physical terms. We know the church is the body of people, but the same concept is true with us. Are we building up or are we tearing down? We need to think about it. We need to be sure that we are doing everything we can to build ourselves as good Christians and to build the church as a good congregation. If you're here this morning, you haven't need to respond to the invitation for any reason.